we present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Philip Jackson as Chief Inspector Japp in Agatha Christie's Death in the Clouds.
If Le Bon Dieu had intended man to fly, he would have provided him with a stronger stomach. There are two things in life that never fail to fill me with horror. The first is sitting down in a dentist's chair, and the second is waiting for the moment when the aeroplane takes off.
Please make sure that your seatbelts are fastened, ladies and gentlemen. We shall be taking off for Croydon very shortly.
I had not even had the time to compose myself for the coming ordeal. Shortly after taking my seat, I had been obliged, par politesse, to give it up.
Venetia, my dear, I had no idea you would be on this plane. How perfectly delightful to see you. Why don't we sit together?
Oh, monsieur,
I didn't mean that you should move. How very kind of you.
I moved to a seat further back in the plane. And no sooner had I sat down than the engines began to roar and we moved on the runway. I tried to distract myself by studying the faces of my fellow passengers. What were they thinking? The pretty girl in the corner seat on the other side of the gangway, for instance.
So it's all over. 1 week living on the Riviera with all the really smart people. And all because of the Irish sweepstake. And now it's back to giving disgusting old women permanent waves.
But why is she trying so hard not to look at the handsome young man sitting opposite her? She is very much aware of him, and he of her.
She's pretending not to let on, but she remembers me all right. That evening in the casino when she lost her last stake on number 6, and I pretended that my winnings on number 5 were hers. I did that rather well.
And the woman to whom I was obliged to give up my seat, she has scarcely said a word to her friend. Oh, mon Dieu, she's going to light a cigarette.
Excuse me, madam. No smoking on board.
Oh, hell.
Sorry, madam.
Send my maid to me, will you? She's in the forward compartment.
Yes, madam.
She is decidedly nervous, that one. And I do not think it is the flying that frightens her.
Your dressing case, my lady.
Thank you, Madeline. Can you find my nail file?
Oh, certainly. Here it is, my lady.
You may go back now.
The channel below gleamed in the sunlight. I had taken a mild sedative to steady my stomach, and it was beginning to take effect. I was growing very drowsy. The two Frenchmen sitting behind me seemed to be arguing about prehistoric pottery. And was the man beside me really taking out a flute from its case, or was I dreaming?
Excuse me, sir. It is Dr. Bryant, isn't it?
Yes, I am Dr. Bryant.
Well, there's a lady sitting at the back there on the other side of the aisle. I don't like the look of her.
I was awake in an instant. The doctor was bending over a stout, middle-aged woman dressed in black who was slumped down in her seat.
She's dead.
I was rather afraid of it.
When did you last see her? Alive, I mean.
She was as right as rain when I brought her coffee down.
When was that?
About 3/4 of an hour ago.
She's been dead for at least half an hour. There's some kind of puncture mark on her neck.
Pardon, monsieur, but there was a wasp flying about the cabin earlier. I killed it. Is it possible that the poor lady died of a wasp sting?
Well, it is possible, I suppose.
We shall be landing at Croydon any minute. Is there anything I should do, Doctor?
No, nothing. The body must not be moved, of course.
Just a little moment. There is something...
My dear sir, you'd better return to your seat.
But there is something that has been overlooked. Do you see? Here, on the floor.
Another wasp, by the look of it.
Yes. It is very like a wasp. But it is not a wasp.
It's a kind of miniature dart with orange and black feathers.
Good Lord! I never expected to see anything like this with my own eyes.
You recognize it, monsieur?
This is a form that is shot from a blowpipe by certain native tribes. Can't remember now whether from South America or Borneo. And I strongly suspect that the tip... No, don't touch it.
You mean this is the famous arrow poison of the South American Indians? Can it be possible? How did you recognize it?
I write detective stories. My name is Daniel Clancy, and I've made myself quite an expert in unusual ways of killing people. But I never thought I'd see anything like this in real life.
But gentlemen, you must return to your seats. The plane is about to land.
At Croydon, we were informed that we would have to remain in the aeroplane until the arrival of the proper authorities.
Now, this is absolutely outrageous! Shutting us in here with a dead body!
It was nearly half an hour before we were taken off and ushered into the presence of the proper authorities, in the shape of my old friend, Chief Inspector Shap.
I hope not to keep you any longer than is necessary, ladies and gentlemen, but as I'm sure you will appreciate, you will have to remain here until the facts of the matter have been established.
Nonsense! I am Lady Horbury. You cannot detain me in this manner.
I am sincerely sorry, Lady Horbury, but you see, this is a very serious matter. It looks like a case of murder.
Murder?
And now, Dr...
Bryant.
Bryant. If you would care to come this way, Dr. Bryant.
May I assist at your interview?
Monsieur Poirot. Sorry, I didn't recognise you all muffled up like that. Do come along by all means.
And why should that funny little man be allowed out, while the rest of us have to stay cooped up in here?
It's probably something to do with the French police.
Whoever he is certainly most observant.
Well, at least they can't stop me having a cigarette in here.
Excuse me, but didn't we meet at the casino at Le Pinay?
Yes, I think we did. Didn't you point out that I'd forgotten to pick up my winnings? I was very grateful that you did.
Do you think that woman really was murdered?
They seem to think so. It's rather thrilling in a way. Rather nasty at the same time.
You've got a knack of turning up in the most unexpected places, Monsieur Poirot.
And is that Croydon aerodrome a little out of your beat, my friend?
I'm after rather a big bug in the smuggling line. Bit of luck my being on the spot like this. It's the most amazing business I've come across in years. Can you give me any idea of the cause of death, Doctor?
I should not really like to say anything definite at this stage.
Our surgeon will be examining the body, of course, so I don't think we need keep you. I'm afraid you'll have to go through the same formalities as the other passengers.
I should be only too happy. I prefer you to make sure that I haven't got a blowpipe concealed on my person.
My sergeant will take care of that. This dart affair, have you any idea what would be likely to be on the tip of it?
As far as I know, curare is the usual poison employed by native tribes.
Would that do the trick?
In a remarkably short time.
But not very easy to obtain, I imagine.
Not at all easy for a layman.
Then you'd better make sure to search him extra carefully, Sergeant. Thank you, Doctor. Poor business, this. A bit too sensational to be true. I mean, blowpipes and poisoned darts in an aeroplane. Well, it's an insult to one's intelligence.
That, my friend, is a very profound remark.
I've got a couple of men searching the plane, but before we get down to questioning everybody, I'd like to get some idea of who was sitting where. The plane was divided into two passenger compartments, I understand, with the steward's pantry and the toilets in between them.
That is so. We need not concern ourselves with the people in the forward compartment.
And the dead woman was sitting at the rear of the plane across the aisle from you.
And in front of her was Mr. Ryder, and in front of him was Mr. Clancy.
A chap who had the brainwave about the blowpipe?
Yes. And in front of him was Mr. Gale, sitting opposite Miss Gray.
Who was facing the rear of the plane. Mm-hmm. So who was on your side of the gangway?
The two Duponts were sitting behind me at the rear.
And Dr. Bryant was beside you. Who was in front?
The Countess of Horbury, with the Honourable Venetia Carr sitting opposite her.
That seems clear enough. Passengers will probably be hopping mad by now, but even so, I think we'll see the two stewards first.
But the stewards revealed remarkably little, other than that the dead woman, Marie Morisot, was a regular passenger.
Business of some kind, I suppose. You don't happen to know what her business was?
No idea, I'm afraid.
Did she speak to anyone on the plane or show any sign of recognition?
Not that I saw, sir.
Did she leave her seat at any time?
No, sir.
Permit me one little question. Did you notice a wasp flying about the plane?
There was no wasp that I know of.
Nor had Lady Horbury, who had noticeably calmed down by the time she was called, seen the wasp.
And did you have any previous acquaintance with the dead woman, Marie Morisot?
No, she was quite unknown to me.
And you didn't notice anything unusual during the flight?
Nothing, but I was facing towards the front of the aeroplane.
And did you leave your seat during the journey?
No.
Did anyone else?
I think two of the men passengers went to the cloakroom, but I can't be certain.
And you didn't see anyone handling anything that looked like a blowpipe?
A blowpipe? Was that how she was killed? No, I certainly didn't.
We've got to find that blowpipe, Poirot, if there really is such a thing. I suppose that writer chap hasn't gone off his onion and decided to do one of his crimes in the flesh instead of on paper.
Why do you not ask him, my friend?
Have you ever owned a blowpipe yourself, Mr. Clancy?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact. I was writing a book, you see. It was all a question of the position of fingerprints on the blowpipe. I had to know exactly, you see. So I bought one from somewhere in the Charing Cross Road.
Mm, do you still have it?
Well, yes, I think so.
Where is it now?
Well, I suppose it must be somewhere around.
What exactly do you mean by somewhere around?
I don't quite know where it is.
Is it with you now, for instance?
No. No, I haven't laid eyes on it for months.
Did you leave your seat at all on the plane?
No, certainly. At least, yes, I did.
And where did you go?
I went to get a Continental Bradshaw out of my raincoat pocket.
And where was that?
At the back of the plane.
So you passed just by the dead woman's seat?
I suppose I must have done.
Tell me, my friend, did you notice a wasp?
A wasp? I certainly did. It tried to sting me. Then it went over to where those Frenchmen were sitting. One of them killed it, I think.
Looks pretty fishy to me. He actually owns a blowpipe, and he went all to pieces when I asked where it was.
Perhaps that was your threatening manner, my friend.
I never threatened Poirot. You should know that. There's nothing for anyone to be afraid of if they're telling the truth. Anyway, if it isn't him, it'll be those two Frenchmen. A very sinister-looking pair. And they've got a battered old suitcase plastered with foreign labels of all sorts. I bet they've been to Borneo and South America. You mark my words, they're up to something.
Oh, my friend, they are hardly the cutthroats. They are two very distinguished archaeologists.
You're pulling my leg.
Not at all. They are Armand Dupont and his son Jean. And they have come to England to lecture to the Royal Archaeological Society.
Well, if you say so, Poirot. But you must admit, they don't look much.
The world's famous men seldom do. I myself have before now been taken for a hairdresser.
You don't say. Well, let's have the rest of them in.
But none of them seem to have noticed anything of any importance. Lady Horbury's acquaintance, the Honourable Venetia Carr, had spent all her time staring out of the window. Mr. Ryder, who was only concerned about making his business meeting, was engrossed in his papers. Norman Gale, who turned out to be, oh, ma foi, a dentist, had eyes only for the beautiful Miss Gray.
You were facing the rear of the plane. Did you happen to notice Madame Morisot at all?
Oh, yes. I noticed her all right.
And why was that, Miss Gray?
Well, she was most frightfully ugly. And her hair was a terrible mess.
After they had all been questioned, Jep Sargent came in, carrying something carefully wrapped up in a handkerchief. It was a blowpipe, and he had discovered it, pushed out of sight behind seat number 9, the seat which had been occupied by me.
So this is your work, old bird.
Oh, mon ami, when I commit a murder, it will not be with the arrow poison of the South American Indians.
It is a bit low, I admit. A crude detective story dodge, but it seems to have worked. So what are we looking for? A man who has travelled to South America or Borneo, or wherever they carry on like that?
Now, if you look closely, my friend, you will notice a microscopic piece of paper adhering to the pipe. It looks very like the remains of a torn-off prize ticket. I fancy that our murderer found the blowpipe not in the upper reaches of the Amazon, but in some Paris curio shop. That will probably make the search easier. And there is one little favor I beg of you, mon ami.
What's that, Poirot?
I would like all the passengers' luggage and the contents of their bags and pockets to be checked and listed.
They'll kick up a terrible fuss.
Oh, I am sure you are more than capable of handling that, mon ami.
Very well, Poirot. Anything for the great detective.
The inquest on Madame Morisot took place 4 days later. It told me very little that I did not know, except for the evidence of one witness.
Monsieur Fournier of the Sûreté.
Although the name on the passport of the deceased was Marie-Angélique Morisseau, she was better known by the name of Madame Giselle, one of the most notable money lenders in Paris, with a number of clients in England, particularly among the upper and professional classes. She was a woman of very original character, and reputed to be extremely wealthy.
The implications of this seemed to make very little impression on the reporters present in court, who were far more excited by the blowpipe and the poisoned dart.
According to the chief government analyst, it had been dipped in the venom of Dysphilidus typus, a South African snake better known as the boomslang.
There was a small stir of interest when Lady Horbury was called, but as it turned out, the reporters were more interested in her hat than her evidence. The jury were, however, greatly impressed by the fact that the blowpipe had been found behind my seat. And at the end of the inquest, the foreman returned a verdict which, I am thankful to say, the coroner refused to accept.
I wonder what was in that paper that the coroner wouldn't have at any price.
I can't tell you if you really wish to know.
Monsieur Poirot, I didn't see you standing there. Well, do tell us.
It was a verdict of willful murder, mademoiselle, against myself. Definitely, I must set to work to clear my character. Au revoir.
What an extraordinarily odd little beggar. I don't see how he could do much detecting. Any criminal could spot him a mile off.
You've got very old-fashioned ideas about detectives. They don't crawl about with magnifying glasses wearing false beards nowadays. They just sit down and think the case out psychologically.
Rather less strenuous?
Physically, perhaps. But of course you need a clear, cool brain.
You mean a hot, muddled one wouldn't do? Look, would you mind... I mean, it would be frightfully nice. How about having a cup of tea with me?
Well, thank you very much. I think that would be an excellent idea.
Well, it's an odd show, this murder business. I don't quite know what to make of it all.
I'm certainly worried about it from the work point of view. I'm an assistant in a hairdresser's, and they mayn't like to employ a girl who's been mixed up in a murder case.
Anyone's only got to look at you to know you couldn't murder anybody.
I'm not so sure about that. There's one of my regular ladies. She's got a voice like a corncrake, and she grumbles about everything. I really think sometimes that killing her off would be a good deed all round, so long as I could be sure I'd get away with it.
Well, you didn't do this particular murder anyway. I can swear to that.
And I can swear that you didn't.
Of course, I don't know what my patients would make of it all.
No patients?
I'm a dentist. And a dentist who might be a homicidal maniac is not a very alluring prospect. I hope you don't mind me being a dentist.
Why should I mind?
Well, there's always something rather comic about a dentist. Not a very romantic profession.
Well, it's decidedly a cut above being a hairdresser's assistant.
I feel we're going to be friends, don't you?
Oh, yes. Great friends, I'm sure of it. Now, who do you really think murdered that Giselle woman?
Well, old boy, that was a pretty narrow escape. You might have been locked up in a police cell.
I fear that such an occurrence might have damaged me professionally.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time a detective turned out to be a murderer. Ah, Monsieur Fournier. May I present my old friend, Monsieur Poirot?
I witnessed your performance in court this morning.
I think I had the pleasure of meeting you some years ago.
Now, may I suggest that you both come and dine with me in my rooms? That is, if you and my old friend Jupp do not object to my collaboration.
That's all right, old cock. After all, you were in on the ground floor, so to speak. Even if it was up in the clouds.
A delicious meal, Monsieur Powell. You have disproved the common assumption that it is impossible to eat well in England.
A bit Frenchified for my taste, but quite respectable in its way.
A meal should always lie lightly on the stomach. It should not be so heavy as to paralyze thought.
And we're certainly going to need our thinking cats this evening.
Tell us what you can about this Giselle woman, Monsieur Fournier.
To tell the truth, I know very little, particularly as far as her private life is concerned. She was a woman of business, a woman who enjoyed power, and she would never allow sentiment to affect her commercial instinct.
Would you say she was an honest woman?
According to her own lights.
What exactly do you mean by that?
The law could have called her to account if only evidence had been forthcoming.
Oh, come on, don't beat about the bush. What was she up to?
Chantage.
Blackmail.
Of a very special kind. It was Madame Giselle's custom to lend money on what you call in this country note of hand alone.
She must have had a very special kind of clientele.
Her customers lay exclusively among the upper and professional classes, classes particularly vulnerable to the force of public opinion.
And easy victims of blackmail.
She had her own very efficient intelligence service. It was her custom, before lending any large sum of money, to collect as many facts as possible about the client in question. At the same time, she was scrupulously honest. She never made use of secret information to obtain money that was not already owed to her.
But there must have been cases when she had to write off a debt. What happened then?
The information in her possession would be made public.
Well, all this opens up a very pretty line in motives for murder. And then there's the question of who's going to come into her money. Mm. Can you help us there at all, Mr. Fournier?
There was a daughter. She did not live with her mother. Indeed, I believe that Madame Morisot had not seen her since she was a tiny child. But she made a will many years ago, leaving everything, apart from a small legacy to her maid, to her daughter, Anne. As far as I know, she's not made another.
Her fortune is large?
I'm going to guess 8 or 9 million francs.
Mm. Just as well the young lady wasn't on that plane, or she'd have been our top suspect. How old would she be, this Anne Morisot?
About 24 or 25, I should imagine.
Well, I don't very well see how she could be connected with the crime. But we'll have to get down to this blackmail business. Everyone on the plane categorically denies knowing Madame Giselle. But one of them's obviously lying, and we've got to find out which. An examination of her papers might give us an idea.
I fear not. Immediately after the news of her death came through from Scotland Yard, I went straight to her house. All the papers in her safe had been burned.
Who burned them, do you know?
She had a confidential maid, Elise, who had instructions to burn the contents of the safe in the event of anything happening to her mistress.
Mm. She evidently had her own strict code of morality.
Exactly. She was ruthless, but she kept faith with those who kept faith with her.
Right. Well, let's get down to it, shall we? There are 11 passengers in that part of the plane, including the dead woman. And there were 2 stewards. It doesn't seem very likely that either of them would have been borrowing money on a grand scale, but we can't exactly rule them out. They were up and down the gangway, and one of them could easily have taken up a position from which they could have used that blowpipe. Mind you, of all the damn fool ways to commit a murder...
And yet it succeeded, did it not? We three sit here talking about it, but we have no knowledge of who committed the crime. Oh, that is success.
Hmm. Right, let's take a look at the passengers, starting up the end of the steward's pantry and the toilets. Seat number 16, that's the hairdressing girl, Jane Grey. Frankly, I don't see her taking out a loan from the old girl, and I don't think a hairdresser's assistant has the slightest chance of laying her hands on snake venom. It's not as though they use it in hair dye.
An error on the murderer's part, perhaps? Only about 2 people in 100 would be likely to have any knowledge of it.
Mm. Now then, number 12, sitting opposite her, Norman Gale. Very much the same applies to him. Small fry. Now, I suppose he might have a better chance of getting hold of the snake venom.
Which is not an injection usually favoured by dentists.
And he did leave his seat to go to the toilet. But that's in the opposite direction from Madame Giselle. To kill her with a blowpipe, he'd have needed the kind of thing that would make a right-angle turn. So he's pretty well out of it.
I agree.
So, we'll cross the gangway to seat 17, the Honourable Venetia Carr. I suppose she could have borrowed a bit from Madame Giselle, and she could just about have taken a sporting shot diagonally across the cabin.
Surely Lady Aubrey is a far more likely suspect. Mm. I happen to know she had been losing very heavily at the baccarat table in the Pinet.
She's certainly the type of person to be mixed up with Madame Giselle. But how could she have done it? She didn't move during the flight. She'd have had to kneel up on her seat and lean over the top of it with all the other passengers looking on.
Have you considered Dr. Bryant?
Big boy in Harley Street. Not very likely to go to a French moneylender. But I bet he could pick up a test tube of snake venom as easy as winking.
I assure you, my friend, I have not forgotten that point.
Mind you, Ryder in seat number 4 was directly in front of the woman. He went to the toilet. He could have taken a pot shot at her on his way back. The only thing is, the archaeologists would have been bound to notice. which leaves us with them. Their position in the cabin is pretty good from my point of view, and they've knocked about the world. They could easily have got hold of snake poison.
It is possible, yes.
But you don't believe it's likely?
To be honest, I do not.
So, let's take a look at where we stand. Jane Grey, Norman Gale, Venetia Carr. No obvious motive, and possibility practically nil. Mm. Lady Horbury, motive strong, possibility nil. Dr. Bryant could have a motive, and possibility good. Clancy, motive doubtful, possibility good. Ryder, motive uncertain, possibility fair. The DuPonts, poor as regards motive, good as to means of obtaining poison.
A very precise summary, Chief Inspector.
Of course, there's a fair bit of checking up to do. Will you investigate the DuPonts when you get back to Paris, Miss Aponio?
Of course. I shall return tomorrow morning. There may be something to be got out of Madame Giselle's maid, now that we know a little more about the case.
And what about you, Monsieur Poirot? Are you going to take a hand?
Oh, yes. I should like to accompany Monsieur Fournier, if I may.
Enchanté.
You've been very quiet over all this. Any ideas?
Have you the list of the belongings of the passengers, my friend?
It will be on my desk, first thing in the morning. Perhaps you would like to take a look at it before you accompany Monsieur Fournier back to Paris.
I would be delighted, my dear chap.
Most of it's pretty routine stuff, as you can see. James Ryder, business cards, pigskin note case.
And a letter informing him that a loan had been successfully negotiated, otherwise we'd be in Quiz Street.
Silver cigarette case, match folder, letter signed Maudy, make an appointment at the Trocadero. Dr. Bryant, cigarette case, lighter, and he was carrying a flute in a case.
Huh? Strange. I thought that was a dream.
Norman Gale had a briar pipe and an empty matchbox, white linen coat, dental mirrors, dental rolls of cotton wool. And the DuPonts were carrying several hollow tubes, which they said were Kurdish pipe stems. Well, they could have done the job just as well as a blowpipe.
Daniel Clancy, newspaper cutting about arsenic poisoning, a golf ball, Continental Bradshaw, and the manuscript of Murder on Vesuvius. Miss Carr, two cigarette holders, receipted hotel bill, Paris, photograph of two spaniels.
Miss Grey, tube of aspirin, French phrase book, casino counter for 5 francs.
Lady Horbury, diamond ring, and like her friend Miss Carr, 2 cigarette holders. Complete makeup outfit in her dressing case and a small bottle labelled boracic powder.
Boracic powder, my eye. The white stuff in that bottle was cocaine. Nothing to do with our case, perhaps. But I've an idea that her ladyship wouldn't stick at much to get what she wanted. Have you seen this morning's sketch?
Sun worshippers. The Countess of Horbury and Raymond Barraclough at Le Pinay. Ah, he plays small parts in films, does he not?
There isn't much material in that bathing dress of hers, is there?
I will take the newspaper with me, if I may.
Want to have a close look, eh? Well, any of this stuff about the passengers being of any use to you?
On the face of it, your list seems to point plainly to one person as the murderer.
Are you pulling my leg?
Oh, no. Quelle idée. But at the moment I cannot see why, or even how. Now I must be on my way to Croydon.
Well, have a good flight, and keep your eyes open for poison darts.
And so, once again, I subjected mon pauvre estomac to the hazards of the air. But the flight was smooth, and I had the antics of Monsieur Fournier to distract me. He had with him a small tube of bamboo, which, at intervals during the flight, he would put to his lips, always aiming in a different direction. And whenever he did so, every eye in the cabin was fixed on him. On our arrival in France, we drove directly to the house of Madame Giselle in the Rue Juliette, where her maid, Elise Grandier, was waiting for us.
Please, come in, messieurs.
I decided that my best course was to sit quietly in a corner and say nothing.
Poisoned? Oh, there is no question of that.
No, mademoiselle, no question.
Whoever would have dreamt of such a thing?
Oh, that is perhaps where you can help me. You must know who were her enemies.
Why should Madame have enemies?
Oh, come, mademoiselle. The profession of moneylender must always involve a little unpleasantness.
It is true that sometimes her clients were not reasonable.
They made scenes. They threatened her.
Oh, no, monsieur, it was not they who threatened. They were sorry for themselves, protesting they could not pay, but they usually paid in the end.
You had no pity for them?
Why should I? They lived beyond their means and had to borrow. Why should they expect to keep the money as a gift? Madame was always fair and just. She lent and she expected repayment.
Were you aware of the means Madame used to make them pay?
I knew nothing, monsieur. Nothing at all.
Mm. You knew enough to burn her papers.
She had left me instructions that if she met with an accident or died away from home, I was to destroy them immediately.
Very well. Now, listen carefully. It is possible that Madame was murdered by a person about whom she held damaging information. Information that was in those papers. Now, it would be quite understandable if you glanced through those papers before committing them to the flames.
No, monsieur, I looked at nothing. The papers were in a sealed envelope. I burned it without undoing the seal.
It is a pity. You acted honorably, but it is a pity. Before she left for England, did Madame say anything to you that might be of any help to us?
No, monsieur. She had been away at Le Pinet. She was in good spirits and business was going well. She directed me to telephone Universal Airlines to book a flight for England the following day. The early morning one was booked up, but I obtained a seat on the 12 o'clock service.
Did any clients come to see Madame on that last evening?
I believe there was one client. Georges, the concierge would know.
Hmm. Mademoiselle, we will take our leave. Hmm. What is it, Monsieur Power? Are you looking for something?
Yes, for something I do not see. Photographs of Madame Giselle's family.
She had no family, monsieur.
But she had a daughter. Is there no photograph of her?
Oh, monsieur, it is true she had a daughter, but that was long ago. It is my belief that Madame had not seen her since she was a tiny baby. She may not even have been married to the child's father.
And Madame Giselle left her money to this daughter.
Who else was there to leave it to? She had no friends. She was always alone. Money was her only passion.
She left you a legacy, you know that.
I have been informed so. Madame was always very generous.
Well, mademoiselle, that will be all for the present. Are you quite sure that there is nothing at all that you have omitted to mention?
What could there be?
Well, come then, Monsieur Powell. We must take our leave.
If you permit, I will follow in a little moment.
Of course. I have a word with the concierge. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
Is there something you wish to ask me, monsieur?
Have you any idea, only an idea, who might have murdered your mistress?
No idea at all. I have already said so to the police.
Ah, you might say one thing to them and another to me.
Why should I do that?
Because it is one thing to give information to the police and another to a private individual.
That is true.
Shall I tell you something, mademoiselle? It is part of my business to believe nothing I am told, nothing that is not proved. I do not suspect this person or that person. I suspect everybody.
Are you saying that you suspect me?
No, Elise. Whoever murdered Madame Giselle was a passenger on that aeroplane, but you might have been an accomplice. You might have passed on to someone the details of your mistress's journey.
I did not. I swear I did not.
I believe you. But nevertheless, there is something you conceal. In every case of a criminal nature, everyone keeps something back. That is so with you. When my friend, Monsieur Fournier, asked you if there was nothing you had omitted to mention, you were troubled and evasive. What is it that you are holding back?
Oh, it is nothing of importance.
Let me be the judge of that.
Monsieur, I am in a difficulty. I do not know what Madame would have wanted me to do.
There is a saying that two heads are better than one. Will you not confide in me?
Very well, monsieur. It is this. This little book was Madame's. It went with her everywhere. When she was about to depart for England, she could not find it. After she was gone, I came across it behind the head of her bed. I did not know what to do with it, so I kept it in my room. You see my difficulty, monsieur.
I believe that you acted with the best intentions. But let me see if there is anything in this book that will aid us.
I do not think that you will find anything of use. It is a private memorandum, but there are numbers only, no names.
CX-256, Colonel's Wife Station, Syria, Regimental Funds, GF-342, French Deputies, Stavisky Connection, Le Pinet, Monday, Casino 10:30, Savoy Hotel, 5 o'clock.
It means nothing, monsieur, or so it seems to me.
It may be very valuable. I will see that you will not be blamed for not handing it over to the police.
Monsieur is very kind.
One last question, mademoiselle. When you reserved a seat on the plane for madame, did you ring up Le Bourget or the office of the company?
I rang the office of Universal Airlines in the Boulevard des Capucines.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
That is where you score, my friend. The private individual gets far more out of witnesses than we ever do through official questions.
But did the concierge tell you nothing?
It was a lady who visited Madame Giselle on the night before she came to England. He did not identify her from any of the photographs, or at least he said he did not, but when I showed him the daily sketch, he gave a little start of recognition.
Ah, and in the notebook there is a significant entry. CL-52, English peeress. Husband.
She is, I understand, an addicted gambler. Nothing could be more likely than she should borrow from Madame.
And the husband?
Either the husband was expected to pay up for his wife's debts, or she had some hold over Lady Aubrey, a secret which she threatened to divulge to the husband. Something to do with the newspaper photograph, perhaps?
Perhaps. There are more entries in the book which may refer to other passengers. RT-367, Doctor, Harley Street. Dr. Bryan, perhaps?
There's not much to go on. Anyone else?
GF-45, attempted murder. Well, that could be anyone. A murderer with a blowpipe, perhaps?
A blowpipe. I have had a report from the Sûreté. A Greek antique dealer has reported the sale of a blowpipe. The price tickets he uses are very similar to the one on the murder weapon, but there is one vital difference.
What is that?
The silk on the darts was red, not black and yellow.
And who was the purchaser of this blowpipe?
An American, or so he says. Chewing gum, wearing tortoiseshell-rimmed glasses, did not speak French. Probably a wild goose chase.
Probably. But now I am going to lead you on another wild goose chase.
Where to?
To the Boulevard des Capucines, the offices of Universal Airlines. And if you please, let me do the talking.
Yes, monsieur, that is correct. Madame's maid asked for the 8:45 service, but it was fully booked, so we gave her a seat on the 12 o'clock flight.
How very curious. A friend of mine who traveled on the 8:45 service on that day said that the plane was half empty.
Possibly your friend has mistaken the day.
No, there was no mistake. It was the day of the murder. He said if he had missed that plane, he would have traveled on the flight on which that woman was killed.
Well, of course, sometimes when people arrive at the last minute...
No, that was not the case. Do you not think it would be better if you were to tell me the truth?
I don't understand you, monsieur.
You understand me very well. You should also understand that in a case of murder, it is a very serious offense to withhold important information. How much were you paid and who paid you?
I meant no harm. I had no idea.
How much?
5,000 francs.
Continue.
A man. I'd never seen him before, came in and said he was going to England the following day. He wanted to negotiate a loan from Madame Giselle, but he wanted to appear to meet her by chance. He knew that she would be traveling the following day, but he could not manage the earlier flight. All I had to do was to tell her that the early service was full and to give her seat number 2 on the 12 o'clock flight. I saw nothing wrong in that. And they do business in unconventional ways.
Americans?
Yes, monsieur.
Describe this man.
He had gray hair, horn-rimmed glasses,
And a little beard.
And did he book a seat for himself?
Yes, seat number one, next to Madame.
And what was his name?
Silas Hopper.
The seat was never occupied. There was no one of that name on the flight. You have withheld important information from the police. This is a very serious offense.
Why was it so important that Madame Giselle should travel on that flight? There is some factor here that I do not understand.
But who is this mysterious American?
Oh, no, there is no American. It is the same as the man who bought the blowpipe, the chewing gum, the nasal accent, the spectacles, and now the false beard. It is easy enough.
It would certainly seem to rule out Lady Aubrey.
Perhaps, but the man who booked the ticket does not necessarily have to be the murderer, my friend.
Yes, it would be easy enough for her to persuade someone to help her. She is a beautiful woman.
Murder has a strange way of bringing people together. To have been close to a mysterious death, to share the ordeal of a coroner's court, establishes a bond of friendship between perfect strangers. Jane Grey, lunching alone at a Lion's Corner house, was suddenly aware of a face at the next table that was vaguely familiar to her.
Excuse me, mademoiselle, but do you not recognize me? We have not been introduced, it is true, unless you call murder a form of introduction.
Oh, of course. You were on the plane.
Jean Dupont.
And I'm Jane Grey. So you're still in England, then?
You permit that I join you?
Yes, of course, please.
My father has been in Edinburgh to give a lecture. We are returning to France tomorrow.
Oh, I see.
The police have not yet made an arrest?
Oh, I haven't read anything in the papers. Perhaps they've given it up.
Oh, no. They never give it up. They work silently in the dark.
Don't. Give me the creeps.
Yes. It is not a nice feeling to have been so close when a murder was committed.
Who do you think did it?
It was not I. She was far too ugly.
You mean you would rather kill a good-looking woman than an ugly one?
Is it really so strange? If a woman is good-looking, you are fond of her. She treats you badly, she is unfaithful, she makes you mad with jealousy. So you say to yourself, I will kill her. It will bring me satisfaction.
And does it?
That, mademoiselle, I do not know, because I have not yet tried. But an ugly old woman like Madame Giselle, who would want to kill her?
I suppose that's one way of looking at it. But perhaps she might have been pretty once.
Yes. It is the tragedy of life that women grow old.
You seem to think a lot about women and their looks.
Well, naturally. It only seems strange to you because you are English. You know, when I was sitting in the... How do you call it?
The coroner's court?
Yes. I looked at you and I thought, how nice it would be if I could see that girl again one day. And here I am sitting next to her. The gods arrange things very well sometimes.
You're an archaeologist, aren't you?
Yes, mademoiselle.
Oh, you must have been to so many countries and seen so much. I shall never go anywhere or see anything.
You would like that? To go abroad, to see the wild parts of the earth? You would not be able to get your hair waved, remember?
It waves by itself.
Mademoiselle, as I said, I have to return to France tomorrow. It would give me great pleasure to spend a little more time in your company. I wonder if you would care to dine with me tonight?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've already arranged something else.
I too am sorry. You will come again to France?
I don't expect so. I doubt whether I shall win the sweepstake again.
The sweepstake?
Oh, a kind of lottery.
Ah, you are a gambler. Then, I wish you good luck. And I hope that your luck will arrange for our paths to cross again someday soon.
Tune in tomorrow for the exciting conclusion of Agatha Christie's Death in the Clouds on the Boxcar 7-Eleven Old Time Radio Pod, where the oldies are still young.